3. Would that I would trade. A year after I started working for Cohen, the firm decided to start something called regional trade units. The home office told us that if we were going to be in this region and do futures business, we had to be in Cleveland. I believed them. That was a mistake. I should have stayed with Ed Cohen. Unfortunately, he didn't tell me that was possible until it was too late. Cohen was the proverbial 500-pound canary. He could do whatever he wanted. If he told the higher-ups that he wanted me to stay, I would have been able to stay. He was a great guy, but he wasn't aggressive. He didn't say, "Hey, Jim, you don't have to do that. You can stay and work with me." So I figured I had to move to Cleveland. I was flattered to be invited to interview for a job in the regional trade unit, considering that I was a 24-year-old with only 1 year of experience. I was offered a position in Cleveland, and I took it. The deal was all the stockbrokers in the region would refer their futures business to two other futures brokers and me and take a split of the commissions. I moved to Cleveland in May 1970 and did a lot of business my first year, most of it in lumber. I developed a good client base and contacts in the lumber industry. One day, our little group, which had grown to 5 from 3, did more business in futures than all of the 112 stockbrokers in the office did in securities combined. Between knowing Cohen, teaching in New York, and producing some of the firm's best LOS 1 figures ever, I was pretty full of myself. I continued to believe that I was different and better than the run-of-the-mill broker. Believing I could bend or break the rules led me to do something really stupid. Not illegal, just a little ahead of its time and more than just a little against firm policy. One of my customers had a trading system and he wanted to manage some outside money. He proposed that I raise $30,000 and put it into an account. He would trade the account, take no fees, and split profits and losses 50-50 with the customers who had put up the money. This sort of arrangement is done all the time today, and usually under terms much less advantageous for the customer. Today, there are usually fees, and no money manager shares in the losses. So I raised the money and informed the customers exactly what we were doing, and they signed papers agreeing to the terms. I even documented the arrangement with the state securities authorities by registering the account as a limited partnership. But I opened the account as an individual account, which it really wasn't. Well, the guy made money for a while, but then he started losing money. After he lost $20,000 of the customer's money, I started getting antsy and said, "Okay, no big deal, but you need to put up your half of the losses, $10,000. He sent a check. The check bounced. Naturally, that caught the attention of the operations manager. The long and short of it is that the trader lost the original $30,000 and $20,000 more. He couldn't or wouldn't pay the $20,000 owed to the firm, and I got fired. I was terminated for cause, which is a big no-no as far as the New York Stock Exchange is concerned. I got blackballed. I couldn't get a job anywhere. Soon after that, the firm collected the money from the client, but a fat lot of good it did me by then. So I called my friend Jack Salmon, who by then was the president of the regional brokerage firm he was working for when I met him back in college. I hadn't had a job for 3 months, and I really didn't want to go to work for a regional firm, but you gotta do what you gotta do. I still had a client base that I thought I could move. "I'm sure I can move the lumber accounts. Do you know any firms where I could take my business?" I said. "Come work for us," he said. "My Cleveland office could really use your talents. I'll pay you 50% of gross. Plus, I'll pay you a 5% override on the whole office." My previous employer had only paid me 25% of gross, so this was a great deal if I could continue to do the business. Sometimes knowing the right people and being in the right place at the right time can make all the difference in the world. I went to work for Salmon in a tiny 4-man office in Cleveland. Most of my accounts transferred over, so business was back to normal fairly quickly. I made good money between January 1973 and July 1976. All the commodity markets got hot when Nixon took us off the gold standard in 1971, and the grain markets went crazy in 1973 and 1974. My clients were making money, and I was making money. I bought a house and a sports car. I went to the managers' meetings, and I was honored as the leading manager based on production improvement. Once again, I encountered the Midas touch syndrome. Everything I touched turned to gold. I didn't think things could get any better than that, but they did.